Chapter 6. Amrila and I found ourselves in a small alcove that opened out into a large dark cavern, as large as the cavern of the great forest, but the glowing mushrooms of the gloom were sparse here. There was a small growth around the opening of the tunnel that led from the second iron door we'd just gone through, but after that, there were only a few patches growing at irregular intervals. "Where are we?" I wondered out loud as the red-skinned woman and I stepped around the corner and looked out into the huge cave beyond. The light here was even dimmer than the rest of the gloom I'd seen, but what was visible seemed more desolate, too. There were none of the shrub-like plants that grew near the river of the great forest or the waterfall near the gloom growth, and the only plant life I could see was a large patch of some kind of thorny vines, which looked like the thick coils of a giant python.
"This looks like it could be near the Dolrath territory,"
Amrila said as she looked around at the sharp, craggy rock outcroppings and the thick tangle of inhospitable vines.
"It's the tribal territory closest to the Twilight region."
"The Twilight region," I repeated as I looked around. "Isn't that a lot deeper down than the gloom?"
"Parts of it,"
the horned woman shrugged.
"Much of the Dolrath and Kharadu territories are deeper than the Yeni lands, and the Twilight region is slightly below them in places."
"Are you familiar with the Dolrath territory?" I asked as I kneeled down and set my backpack on the ground to look for my binoculars.
"I was born in a village under Dolrath rule,"
Amrila replied as she watched me with a curious tilt to her head.
"Why?"
"Let's look around and confirm if this really is the Dolrath lands or part of the Twilight region." I pulled out the binoculars and handed them to the black-eyed woman. "I'd really like to know for sure where this tunnel leads to before we try to find a way back."
"We're not going back the way we came, are we?"
Amrila asked in an apprehensive tone. "Now that we know how the trap works, I think we'll be fine," I replied as I stood and strapped my backpack back on. "Like I said earlier, we'll wear our ear protection to muffle the sound of the notes so they won't affect us as much. We can also try going through the room one at a time. I didn't feel anything until you started to come up behind me. Maybe the tones only mess with your mind when multiple people try to go through at once." I started to walk forward and into the cavern to see if there was high ground we could get to for a better view of the large cave we were in. "Either way," I continued as the horned woman fell into step beside me, "we're better prepared to deal with it now."
"Very true, partner,"
Amrila smiled at me. 30 yards from the alcove was a tumbled pile of boulders, probably the remnant of a rockfall from decades ago, and the Zinkari woman and I climbed to the top to get a better look at the surrounding area. As we looked out over the desolate cavern, I kept my new rifle ready. I was still on high alert from the tone trap, and I was also all too aware that we could be on the edge of the demon-infested Twilight region. The red-skinned woman scanned the horizon with the binoculars, while I kept an eye out for any movements nearby. But the cave was eerily quiet. The Yeni territory was full of life between the river and the great forest, but here, the only sound was the occasional pebble falling when small rocks became dislodged from the ceiling overhead.
"We are definitely in the Dolrath territory."
Amrila handed me the binoculars and pointed to the southeast of our position.
"I can see a road I think leads to the Crystal Forest from the Dolrath's main encampment. If we follow it south, we'll find an underground lake."
"Are you sure?" I asked as I looked for the road in the faint light.
"Reasonably sure,"
Amrila shrugged. "Not that I don't believe you," I replied as I put the binoculars back in my backpack and started back down the rockfall. "But I'd like to be 100% sure where this is before we leave. Let's go south a bit and see if we can find the lake." The Zinkari woman and I struck out southeast until we hit the road, which was really more of a worn footpath in the bedrock. It must have taken centuries of regular travel to wear down the rock like that, and as we turned south to follow the path, I noticed more of the thorny vines growing in large, twisting patches. Eventually, the trickling sound of water could be heard up ahead, but the echoes of the cavern made it hard to guess how far away it really was. After about a couple of hours of walking, I could see the slight glitter of water where the few glow mushrooms were reflecting off the lake, but Amrila's eyes were far better suited to the darkness, and she held out a hand for me to stop, crouched down, and pointed up the road.
"Something's wrong,"
the horned woman said. "What is it?" I asked in a hoarse whisper as I crouched down beside her.
"Up there on the road,"
she pointed again.
"It looks like bodies on the ground. Maybe gnomes from their size."
I took out the binoculars again and looked at the place where the red-skinned woman pointed, but the lack of light made it difficult for me to see anything beyond some dark shapes on the ground near the lake. "Here," I handed the binoculars to Amrila, whose black eyes were made for seeing in the dark. "Tell me what you see." Amrila held up the binoculars to her almond-shaped eyes and took a moment before she answered.
"There's a half dozen of them,"
the Zinkari replied in a quiet voice.
"Definitely gnomes. I don't see any movement. Some of the bodies look like they've been eviscerated. Should we get a closer look?"
I remembered what Scourge and Grok had told us about the attacks happening all over the gloom. Bodies left mutilated. No survivors left to report what happened. It could be helpful to see the scene firsthand, but there was also the possibility that whoever attacked the gnomes was still in the area. "It's risky, but I think we should take a look," I said as I weighed the pros and cons of the situation. "I want to see if we can figure out who or what's behind these attacks, so I'll go first with my rifle at the ready. But your eyes are better in the dark, so if you see any movement at all as we get close, I need you to tell me right away."
"I've got your back."
Amrila grinned fiercely, and her pointed teeth glinted in the low light of the cavern. "Thanks, partner." I grinned back as I stood, and then we slowly approached the slaughtered gnomes at the edge of the underground lake. I had my Galil Ace slung back while we walked, so I held it at the ready and scanned the road ahead for any signs of movement. There was something in the air I couldn't put my finger on, a sort of tension, like a string pulled to its limits and about to snap. Maybe it was just the slaughterhouse smell that lingered in the still air as we approached the bodies, but I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. Finally, Amrila and I came up to the still, lifeless forms of the gnomes and saw there were 7 of them, each one more horribly mutilated than the last. One of the small forms was splayed over a boulder by the road that ran along the edge of the lake, and their guts hung in coils from the hole torn in their stomach. Another one had the flesh ripped from their face in bloody tatters, so the bone and muscles underneath were exposed. I was not a squeamish person. I could field dress and butcher a deer without a second thought to what I was doing, but this was something else entirely. The sheer brutality of what had been done to these gnomes made my stomach churn, and I breathed through my mouth to avoid the smell of blood, decay, and shit mingled together.
"By the gods,"
Amrila murmured with wide, dark eyes.
"Who would have done this? What would be the point?"
I could see what the red-skinned woman meant. Scattered around the bodies were pickaxes, shovels, and 2 or 3 short swords. I could also see several of the dead still had small coin pouches on their belts, and there were 2 lumpy, medium-sized burlap sacks tossed carelessly to the ground. This hadn't been a bandit attack, or the thieves would have at least taken the coin purses. Maybe the brutality is meant to cause fear and panic, I thought out loud. Scourge might have been right. This could be a ploy to get the tribes to unite under Ursinger's banner. Amrila went to the burlap sacks and started to open them as I looked over the ruined bodies of the gnomes. They seemed to have been common workers, about some daily business, and the few swords laying on the ground must not have done them any good either, because there were no dead from whatever had attacked them. As I examined the ground for any clues of how many attackers there might have been, who or what had attacked the gnomes, I felt the back of my neck prickle. I still felt like we were being watched, but when I glanced behind me, all I saw were rocks and shadows. I clicked my tongue, and my eyebrows knitted together in annoyance. Maybe I was still just keyed up from the traps in the tunnel, but something about this place bothered me. "Let's get our ears on."
"Got it."
Amrila nodded and slipped her headphones over her ears. I put my Pro X headphones around my ears and turned them on, just in case. Then I turned back to the bodies and clicked my headlamp to get a better look at the bodies. And as soon as the beam came on, a glint of metal 2 feet away on the ground caught my eye. "What's this?" I moved over to the object glittering on the ground, reached down, and picked it up. It looked like some kind of gold pin. A weird symbol was stamped on it that looked like a pyramid, open at the bottom, with little circles drawn at the end of each line.
"Eddie!"
The horned woman hissed from behind me.
"That light is going to be a beacon for anyone or anything that might be in the area."
"Fair point," I said as I clicked the light back off. "What did you find?" The Zinkari woman brought over one of the sacks and held it open for me to see, and as my eyes readjusted to the darkness, I saw the burlap sack was filled with shards of multicolored crystals. "What are these?" I asked as I picked one up to take a closer look.
"They're from the Crystal Forest,"
the red-skinned woman replied.
"If you know how to prepare them properly, they have magical properties. They can be worth quite a lot to the right person."
Suddenly, I heard the sound of a rock dislodge and the clack as it hit the ground somewhere just behind me, and my heart skipped a beat. Then the little hairs at the back of my neck rose, like they'd been statically charged, and I whipped around in time to see what looked like a moving wall of shadow swooping down on Amrila and me. "Watch out!" I shouted to the horned woman as I jumped out of the way and pulled my Galil into the firing position, but I could barely follow the movements of the black mass. The thing was like a living gas, and it morphed and shifted as it moved toward Amrila, who had pulled out her swords and swung at the shadow with an upward motion. The black, fog-like thing shifted and moved out of the way of the red-skinned woman's attack, and for a brief moment, the form of a shriveled skeletal arm and skull-like head were revealed. Then, the gaseous shadow reformed, and all that could be seen was an amorphous black cloud. What the fuck? My mouth felt dry as the reality of this new horror solidified in my brain, and I started to slowly move around to get a good angle on a shot while its attention was on Amrila. I circled left until Amrila would be safely out of the path of my shot, raised my Galil to my shoulder, and squeezed the trigger, and then a bullet exploded out of the end of the barrel. But the shadow creature did not react to it, except to turn suddenly, and the ghostly shape of its head became visible for one blood-chilling instant. It was as if the shadow thing had fucking absorbed the round, because I didn't see any sign of the bullet striking the wall on the other side of the creature.
"Shoot it!"
Amrila grunted as she brought her black jeweled blade back around and retreated to a safe distance. The adrenaline in my system had me hyper-aware, and even in the tense, frightening moment, I was impressed with how much I could hear over the headphones. "I'm trying!" I grunted as I took aim a second time. I fired the Galil at the shadow again as it moved toward me, and for a moment, all sound shut off from the rifle fire, activating my headphones. But the dark, swirling mass was not even slowed down. Fuck me running sideways! The Zinkari woman lunged forward again and struck the side of the monster with her blade, and the shadow recoiled with a hissing sound. With all the fog or mist swirling around the thing, it was impossible to tell where the creature's actual form began and ended. I needed to get a better sense of where it was to be certain I was actually firing at it, and not just the shadowy smoke around this fucking bastard. I didn't want to burn through my bullets too quickly, especially if there were more of these beasts. So I reached up and clicked on my headlamp while the shadow creature was distracted by the onslaught of the horned woman's swords. As soon as the beam of light hit the black mass, there was a horrible instant where I saw the creature for what it was. The bony body had rotten bits of flesh hanging from sinewy exposed muscles, and I realized the smell of rot wasn't coming from the bodies of the gnomes. It was coming from this thing. The tight, dehydrated skin of the creature's face stretched and tore as it screamed and shrunk away from the light. Then it seemed to physically pull the shadows back around itself, and despite the bright beam of light glaring on it, the monster dissipated into thin air. What the actual fuck? I turned around and looked in all directions to make sure the unholy fucker was really gone, but I didn't see any signs of the shadow creature. What the fuck was that? I frowned. Did I kill it?
I doubt it,
Amrila said as she adjusted the volume on her headset.
It must have been a lesser demon, except...
Except what? I asked loud enough for her to hear me when she trailed off.
Except that it doesn't make any sense.
She continued as she too looked around to ensure the demon was really gone. Well, that didn't sound great. Let's get out of here first, I sighed. Then you can explain to me how it doesn't make sense, once we're sure it's nowhere fucking nearby, and we should probably make a habit of having our headphones on all the time. Amrila nodded and grabbed the burlap sacks of crystal shards. I didn't feel great about looting the gnomes, but the loot was better in our hands than anyone else's, so I took the coin pouches off the bodies as well. It wasn't much, but the few coins were more than enough to replace the ones we'd lost playing musical stones. Then, the Zinkari woman and I walked away from the scene of the dead gnomes and back north up the road, but we looked back frequently to make sure we weren't being followed, and I kept the headlamp on just in case. We didn't see any signs of the lesser demon, but I didn't want to stop until we had the iron door between us and that abomination. Though, after watching it disappear like that, I wasn't sure if it couldn't move through walls, iron doors, or anything else it wanted to. Finally, we got back to the alcove where we'd entered the Dolrath territory, and I didn't waste any time opening the iron door. I let Amrila go first, and then I made one final sweep with the headlamp before I walked through and waited for the iron door to close itself again. Now Amrila and I were back in the room with the gargoyles, the musical puzzle, and the safe portion of the flagstones next to the door.
I wish I knew why a lesser demon was in the gloom.
Is that rare? I asked as I stood and put my ear protection around my neck. I thought the Yenny were supposed to keep the demons out of the gloom.
Only pure-blooded demons,
Amrila corrected.
Lesser demons are a lower order, not true demons. If any creature with a demonic bloodline were barred from the gloom, there would be no Zenkari. But lesser demons never come into the gloom. I've only ever seen one once before deep in the swamps of the Twilight Region. They prefer damp and dark places.
It did look a little dry. I wrinkled my nose as I recalled the husk-like skin of the lesser demon's face as it cracked and stretched. Though something must have driven it up into the gloom. What could do that?
I don't know.
The red-skinned woman shrugged.
Even the people and creatures that live in the Twilight Region avoid the swamps. The demon was close to the lake, though. I suppose it's possible it wandered up on its own, but it's unlikely.
Let's get back up to the surface for now, I said as I shook my head. We could stand around all day speculating, but I'd rather do it in the comfort of my own home. Amrila and I both turned the volume on our ear protection off, and I waited as the horned woman slowly made her way back across the trapped room. Thankfully, the muffs worked beautifully, and the low tones that played as Amrila sauntered her way back to the archway on the other side were barely audible. And I'd admit I indulged myself a little and watched her round, firm ass as she moved from flagstone to flagstone. The Zenkari woman even caught me at it as she turned and looked over her shoulder, and a wicked, sharp-toothed grin spread across her gorgeous face before she winked at me. I smiled back and tried my best not to blush at being caught like a teenage boy checking out his crush. The black-eyed woman and I safely made our way back through the other traps, too. The tripwire was easy enough to avoid, and making our way through the deployed spikes was just a matter of climbing through the crisscrossing poles that obstructed the passageway. As we walked, I continued to mull over the problem at hand, and my mind tried to run through as many scenarios as it could. How intelligent was the lesser demon back there? I asked my red-skinned companion.
What do you mean?
She asked with a raised eyebrow. I'm just trying to figure out how someone like Ursinger might control it, I replied. Grokken's scourge said everyone who'd been attacked was mutilated, and there were no survivors. The way we found those gnomes matches that to a T. So the shadow thing, or others like it, are probably what's behind the attacks all over the gloom.
Makes sense.
Amrila agreed as we made our way out of the southern tunnels. So, are the lesser demons intelligent? I scratched my chin. Can they be bribed or reasoned with, like the Nyctors apparently can? Or are the demons more like animals? Would Ursinger have had to use some kind of bait to trick them out of the gloom?
They are territorial,
Amrila said with a thoughtful expression.
And they eat anything that comes into their swamp, and I mean anything. I'm not sure how intelligent they are, but to get one to leave its swamp, I can only imagine you'd have to have something better to offer it, or use great force.
I considered what the Zenkari woman said, but it also led me to thoughts of protecting my own territory. Now I knew the kind of horrors that lived below the gloom, so it was time for me to secure the tunnels that led up to the surface.